that provides curveballs. The world of broadcasting. I've got to stand up for a second. Give me one moment because I got to put on a vest. Starting to get to that point in my little cubby here. This is one way to know for certain that it's time to get on the road, to start heading to warmer climes. Although I don't think that opening, week at Oaklawn is necessarily going to be warm, but then some Arizona. So we're getting there very steadily. And in fact, yesterday, I don't know if you saw that I retweeted. Pat McKenna had a little piece about they officially closed now at the Oklahoma at Saratoga. And, you know, it's gotten so that really there's only, you know, November, December, January, February, March. By late March, it's really a short period that Saratoga is not open as a training center. I mean, it gets quiet, and there's actually, if you've never seen it, and of course there are the periods when there's horse shows, but if you've never seen it at the, you know, it's more like October, not so much immediately after the meet, but a little bit later when the trees start to turn, and it's you know, there's only a handful of barns that are operating, and it's really kind of nice. And a lot of cases, you know, there's some smaller outfits that have a handful of horses, and you know, that aren't going to go to Belmont, you know, that kind of thing. And it's pleasant. And of course, there are, you know, there's big outfits that still have horses up, you know, with Chad and Belmont. You know, Mott, I bet you Mott, they think about it, he's probably been the longest, you know, late season resident up there for, you know, at the Oklahoma for years and years. And leaves a significant, you know, number at Saratoga. And part of it is nice and quiet. You know, the Asmussen barn, you know, they typically just stay several weeks after, and continue, you know, post Saratoga. But I've had the occasion when we had Toy Cannon, when Bill Mott was training for us and Paul Pompa, late wonderful Paul Pompa, and I got to go over. It was really that. I really kind of treasured that, in fact, going over there like that. You know, kind of go over on a Saturday morning and watch Crazy Toy Cannon try to kill his exercise rider. you know, and speaking of the training regimen, got at least one visit today. I've reached out on two fronts that I wanted to provide for a couple of young horsemen that are, you know, one's pretty established. Tyler Service has been out on his own now for, I don't know what, maybe, probably sent out a couple under his name before he was, you know, completely on his own, but Tyler is going to join us in the first half of the show. Talk to him at Pennsylvania Derby, and he mentioned that he was going to send horses to New York and for the start of Aqueduct. And it just so happens I saw that, you know, he's got horse in this week already, and want to give him a chance to talk about, you know, setting up shop and coming to New York. And he's hoping that he can establish, you know, a base and pick up some horses and some clients and claim some and so forth. Yeah, he sent out his first starter in 2019. And, you know, has had a steady, very steady, actually, 67 starters in 2019, 71 in 20, and then 82 so far this year. So, you know, small, steady growth. He had 12 wins his first year, 16 his second, and 11 so far this year. So we'll talk to Tyler, and you know, he can explain the idea and trying to establish a toehold in New York. And he's sending out Sugar Ray 2 on Friday. And have you seen, by the way, speaking of Friday, there's kind of a two-part conversation, really, because if you haven't seen what's going on Friday at Aqueduct, it's this mammoth slate of races that first Andy, when the overnight came out, Andy sent the missive. We'll talk to Andy in hour three, of course, today, and then I guess Nick started to handicap it as well and look ahead to it, and it really. Yeah, you've got guys coming to town, too. I mean, haven't gone through all the, you know, all the outfits. Now that I say that, I do have the PPs right here, actually. But it's something. And Thursday's card is quite good. So the key, one of the keys, obviously, is keeping that turf course, keeping the two turf courses. Let's keep the, you know, the wet weather, the more wet weather we get, the tougher it gets to keep that, you know, the courses, you know, playable. And that will be a big part. In fact, since I brought this up, let's take a peek now that I ventured into that arena, see what Ozone Park is, well, there's a little bit of a chance, but it's going to be a gorgeous weekend in New York too. So we didn't get a chance to go down on Sunday for our race, but we'll look ahead to December 12th, exactly four weeks hence. There was a nice race, same race, going a little bit further for Scherzando. So we'll talk to Tyler Service, and we'll talk to Neil Pessin. Yeah, as promised, can't miss an opportunity to visit with Neil off of the nice performance by Bell's the One, and I think there's a chance waiting to hear back officially, but I'd love to get Roger Atfield in here. Roger is always tricky to reach because I've got a home number, I've got the barn number, I've got a cell phone, and I've got like some off. And I never know. I send the request out to all the numbers, and sometimes we hear back. I'd love to, one of my favorite people to talk to. He's so interesting, and that lady, you know, the win by Lady Spite Spear was interesting because she was, at least on the morning line, she was a decent price, and you know, she was coming off the layoff, and so I think the idea was, or the impression was, you know, that she was, you know, might need one, or you know, vulnerable, or however you want to characterize it, and she ended up going off at almost 6-1, which was interesting. And when it's funny because you know, Tina played in the Beat Bic contest, and I looked at the races, you know, give her some input. And when I got to that, I tried to make the Trombetta stake winner, that Aug Lutz, and she took a bunch of money and ended up going off as second choice. And Gary Barber and Cassie's, we didn't get a chance yesterday with Mark to talk about our secret agent, but she ended up taking a bunch of money, went off at 3-2. I think she was 2-1 morning line. But I saw Lady Spite Spear in there coming back, and I thought, wow, 4-1. I think she was 4-1 on the morning line. And I thought, you know, the fact that she's coming back in this spot, in the Bessarabian, grade two, that said a lot. And one of those, you know, this is one of those handicapping scenarios where you can't look at where the horse was when it ran. I mean, in this case, you know, she'd run in September, but clearly a horse that, you know, kind of spread the starts with. And so, you know, at first glance, she didn't necessarily look, you know, like she was one of the obvious winners, but I always think about Atfield, and I think Shepherd too, explaining about fillies and mares in the fall, and that is always stuck in the back of my head. So Lady Spite Spear remains perfect and is being carefully managed. So I'd love to talk to, if we don't get to Roger, certainly Sid tomorrow can touch on this Chuck Fipke homebred out of the theatrical mare, Lady Shakespeare, who it'll be worth, actually it'd be worth looking at how much, this is the 3 year old, and I'm very curious to see if she, Lady Shakespeare, has she had anything else. Because, I mean, she's got to be getting a little, 2006, so 15 years old, and she's got, there's a, boy, she's been productive. She's had, there's a winner that's a two-year-old, Ready Lady, and then that's a More Than Ready. This always makes me laugh now that we know the secret to Chuck Fipke naming horses to keep it easily straight for him. The Spitestown, Lady Spite Spear. Then here's a More Than Ready, that Ready Lady. There's a Full Brother. And I guess he can't really call that one Lady Ready. and then there's a real homebred for Fipke, a B Jersey filly that's on the ground, that's a weanling. So she was a little, you know, it's interesting. She, you know, this is Lady Shakespeare was out of Lady Sherrill, the wonderful Lady Sherrill, and I'm gonna let Sid riff on this family. Actually, this'd be a good, interesting. It's an interesting discussion, and she's been paired three times with Galileo, and the Galileo matings were not particularly fruitful. Couple of winners, one that was unraced, then the Spitestown. It's interesting that they haven't gone back to Spitestown with Lady Shakespeare, you know, knowing what this maybe this coming year. So we'll find out from Sid. I kind of wandered into this, and it's always fun when Sid provides, you know, the insights, the decision making process, and I'm sure a lot of you are in the throes of that process. So, Neil Pessin this morning and Tyler Service reached out to another young trainer that is going out on their own. And Lindsay Schultz So I'm not sure if we're going to talk to Lindsay today, but I'm looking for it. I don't know if you saw Marty McGee alerted everybody to Lindsay going out, and what a nice gesture by Marshall Graham and Clay Sanders, the 10-strike team, helping her get started. And, of course, they did the same thing with Michelle Giangiulio as well. A nice job spreading horses around. We're going to talk to Dr. Alday a little horse health today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn, and a little bit of a theme to a degree, because Todd Pletcher, as I promised, Todd is going to join us late in the show, probably the last 20 minutes or so. And in addition to catching up with Todd about Breeders' Cup, and Life is Good, and plenty of other runners to discuss. We're also going to let Todd talk about English Channel, and of course Dr. Alday, well prepared and having had his hands on English Channel during his racing career as part of Steve's practicing, and so we'll get his thoughts too, and specifically with English Channel. And granted, they haven't fully disclosed the specifics, but I thought that Dr. Alday could talk about the kinds of health challenges that can take a horse in such rapid fashion. And, there's a few things that come to mind, neurological issues, viral issues, colitis X, that is devastating and very difficult to stop. So we'll let Dr. Alday kind of talk about, emergency scenarios that the diagnosis process and what figuring out what is what is attacking a horse that days earlier was robust and healthy. I mean, things like things like laminitis are different and slow moving and there's variety of ways to fight that. This, from everything anybody I think can tell, I mean, this was something that just swooped in and claimed English Channel in short order. So Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And in fact, Reborn, I'll let Steve riff on that, because that's a colostrum product that a number of occasions can really help a horse that is fighting, something that's tough to identify. I've had experience with it with a friend who's older gelding, off the track runner, was losing weight and wasn't eating, and there was just something amiss. And the Reborn product kind of brought him around. Let Steve, we'll just send out the volleyball for Dr. Alday. Let him spike a few as he's good at. And Andy Serling. So there you go. Pest and Service, Alday, Serling, Pletcher, and perhaps more. You never know, right? I think we went through pretty much everything else, right? It was fun to have that. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Rob Johnston, and the upset by mandate. One thing that I can add in, and I think I hinted at it yesterday with Johnston. One of the things that Mike can be contributing to a horse like this, you know, continuing to improve, is Blame, whose progeny improve as they age. And, you know, like so many, you know, some are precocious and then, you know, get to whatever level they're going to get to and maintain that level. At my website at Derby Trail, a discussion countering some idiotic notions, and included the Thoroughgraph sire statistics involving Blame. And you can see numerically how Blame progeny, you know, what their average performance level is at 2, then at 3, then at 4, and then 5 and above. And they keep improving. And, you know, here it is, you know, another 6 weeks, and these horses go from 3 to 4 and from 4 to 5, etc. So, you know, it's the time of year that a horse is fully mature at 5. And so, you know, here's a horse that had shown some improvement in his prior start, and, you know, I think Andy will probably speculate too. Andy made the interesting suggestion that, you know, the softish turf, and Rob Johnston acknowledged that too yesterday. You know, the may really take into the softish footing. So, to me, it's always worthwhile to, you know, try to, you know, backtrack and figure out what it was that may have contributed, you know, to a surprise like that. So, no surprise, though, from Neil Pessin and the wonderful Bells of the One. We're going to talk to Neil next. While we get Neil, let me slip in a couple of pieces of news. Rock Your World retired. It's one thing. It's one thing when you see Essential Quality, you know, you knew was headed in the retirement direction. This kind of came as, this is the kind of horse that you hope you're going to see as a 4-year-old. You know, that had a good campaign, as it were, and big win, of course, in the Santa Anita Derby. But, you know, tried the turf and kind of expected to see him, you know, as a 4-year-old. But he's going to Spendthrift, and, you know, part of it, Candy Ride, the appeal of standing Sons of Candy Ride, I'm sure enters into this. And so we'll let Sid riff on that tomorrow, too. So Rock Your World, off to the breeding shed, and I think I hear Neil Pessin in the background. Neil, good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm great, and the obvious question about all of this with Bells the One staying at home, bypassing Breeders' Cup, and you had this, you know, this is a $300,000 stake. You know, I'll ask the question that you've already been asked 100 times. Any regrets about not going to California?
Well, I'll tell you what I've told everybody else. They didn't change the transportation around any. And that was the main reason I didn't go, was because of the transportation, getting out there on FedEx and having to put her in a crate for 6 or 7 hours. And she's kind of a high-strung filly. And so I have exactly zero regrets about not going.
Well, and, you know, staying at home and having an opportunity like this. And she just feels like a mare, Neil, at this point, that, you know, just knows what's going on out there, doesn't necessarily need the big pace setup that she might have at one time. Talk about winning on Saturday.
Well, she just ran her race. She knows where the finish line is, and she knows who's in front, and she's just very competitive and has a huge heart. And some people say, well, you know, at the quarter pole, I didn't know if she was going to get up. I said, when they broke, I knew she was going to get up. I had complete confidence in her the entire way because I just know how good of a mare she is and how much heart and desire she has, and there was never a doubt in my mind. Did I think she'd win by a length at the eighth pole? Probably not, but I knew she was going to get there.
Well, and
it did take a lot of pressure off. There was a lot of heat about not going to the Breeders' Cup, but that's from people that don't understand my horse as well as I do, and more ignorance than knowledge from a lot of people. And I just want to put that out there to everybody that's accusing me of dodging. I was not dodging. I didn't want to get my mare hurt on the trip going out, and I did what I thought was best for her, and I'm sticking by it, and I'm very happy with what we did.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with winning, you know, a $300,000 purse, and you know, being able to go on from there, confidently handled by Corey, and you know, the race. Let's be fair. I mean, the race lost some luster, Wisconsin having to come out, but you know, still have to go out there and line up and get it done.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that Wisconsin didn't get to run just because of the rivalry we kind of have. It's a friendly rivalry, and we banter back and forth with each other a lot. And I'm up on her 3-2, but I was hoping to go up 4-2 on her. But I'm sure Wisconsin will be back next year, and we'll be back next year, and we'll hook up many times, and probably both of us hopefully end up in the Breeders' Cup next year at Kingland.
Well, and you know, that's a part of the storyline here too. I mean, you knew that there was this long-term target that you just have to van ride over to, you know, to be ready for, and you know, there's another, you know, Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint for her to run in, you know, next year.
Yeah, but that, I'll be honest, that really didn't play into the decision any. It was strictly just the transportation and getting her out there in one piece and getting her back. And because the transportation coming back was piecemealed, they didn't have a charter coming back. And some flew to Memphis, some flew back to Indianapolis, some flew out on Saturday, some flew out on Friday afterwards. So it was just a mismatch, and I just didn't like the arrangements. And so we stayed home and won here, and she's doing really well. She's getting ready to go to the farm tomorrow to get about 4 to 6 weeks of turnout in the paddock, and then she'll come back down to New Orleans, the fairgrounds, and get ready for the Madison at Kingland in April.
So essentially, you envision more or less the same kind of a campaign next year?
Yes, yes. We'll point to the Madison and the Derby City Distaff, and then just play it by ear from there, pointing to the Breeders' Cup at Kingland, and just depends on how she does. We've made a couple audibles this year just because she was doing so well that we weren't planning on the TCA, and we ran in there just because she was coming out of her skin. And that worked out well, and then we ran here, and that did well. So no complaints with what she's done for me this year. She makes me look good. I don't make her look good.
Well, and to look at the complete picture of the 5-year-old season: 7 starts, 4 wins, 2 seconds. You know, this listed stake, the TCA, the Grade Two, the Grade Two, of course, at Saratoga, which was wonderful to have you win at the Spa. The Honorable Miss, the Roxalana, second dead heating in the Madison. You know, one question, Neil, that we could include in here: the 7/8 versus the 3/4, and what's your feeling? Not that she hasn't, you know, won it at 7/8, but
her Grade One was at 7/8 in the Derby City Distaff, and it basically with the 7/8, if they go too slow, then it could compromise a little bit if they just drag it. But if they just have a regular pace in there, I think 7/8 is probably her best distance. She's got a great record at 3/4, but it's just the way the races have worked out. And there's not a lot of 7/8 choices out there. So, but I don't think 7/8 is a problem for her at all. Like, I think she, you know, with a little better trip in the Breeders' Cup, she's had to wait just a second to turn in for home. and probably cost her second beating Serengeti by a nose. I mean, got beat a nose by her. So I think we maybe could have caught her with a little luck going 7/8, and she's and the Derby City Distaff here at Churchill was 7/8. So that really doesn't bother me too much. I'm not sure how she'd do it a mile, and I almost thought about trying that, but then I thought, well, if I get her beat, I'm going to really look like an idiot.
And
so
it's not like
they think I'm already am one, but I don't want to prove it.
Well, there's plenty of opportunities. It's not like you got to go shopping for windmills to tilt.
Right, and we may try. You know, just depends on how it works out next year. We may try a mile at some point if there's the right race someplace. But and I wouldn't be adverse to trying her two turns again at one point, but she's doing so well around one turn, it's kind of hard to do it.
Well, I was gonna ask some thought on that because she's out of the street cry mare, and from a pedigree standpoint, but she does have that closing sprinter profile that very frequently doesn't translate great to two turns.
Yeah, well, she's been two turns twice, I think. Once was at Fairgrounds on the turf going a mile, and she won just on class because turning for home, it didn't look like she was going to hit the board, and then she just kind of kicked in. I really don't think turf is her preferred surface at all, but just her class won that day. And then we came to Keeneland for the two-year-old race going a mile on the 16th, and she broke slow, kind of stumbled at the start or bobbled at the start and was way back. And Flo asked her to get up, and when he asked her to get a little close, she just kind of took off with him around the turn. And she went from last beaten, I'd say, six or seven lengths by the next to last horse to head and head for the lead going around the first turn on the outside. So I think we used her run up in the first 3/8 of a mile. So that's why that form looks so bad.
Well, no matter what, this has been just such a productive and consistent performer for you and for Corey and of course for Mr. Lothenback. And this is one of those examples again, Neil, of how the mares, the community of racing mares, for the fan base, they keep coming back. I mean, I just talked as you were coming on. I talked about Rock Your World retiring. You know, we lose 3-year-olds and colts pretty quickly, it seems. Having a horse like this for people to root for yet another year, that really goes a long way to the fan base.
I think it does too. And she's getting a little bit of a fan base now. We had quite a few people show up just to come in from out of town to watch her run Saturday.
Nice.
And Mr. Lothenback, he's a sportsman and he likes to race, and he could have stopped and bred her this year with no problem. He put her in the sale and got a lot of money for her, but he didn't want to do that. He said, let's run her another year, and I was more than on board with that, and so was Bell. And I just want to say, too, Corey rode a beautiful race Saturday. I've had a lot of jockey agents try and call me and get on her. And Corey fits her well and rides her very well. And he rode a perfect race Saturday, cut the corner, and then got her outside. And he knows what he has on her, and he rides her very confidently.
I don't know why anybody would even call you and with that query, given
hoping.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's you want to talk about tilting windmills. I mean, here's a guy that's won, six stakes on this horse or so in the last 2+ years. I don't think you're reaching for anybody else anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad rider. I think he's won like 19 riding titles at Churchill or something, so...
Yeah.
I think we can stick with him.
Exactly. In addition to Bell, Neil, you got some very nice things going on. And there's a horse that has really come a long way. And I know we talked about him earlier in the year. But another win for Happy American and a 98 buyer. This also Lothenbach, the Run Happy Colt. It feels like he's going someplace.
Yeah, he just needed to mature a little bit. He was, you know, mentally wasn't all together, and he's getting better. He's still not 100% there. And I think you're still going to see him improve a little more. And we're just trying to take baby steps with him. His next step may be in one of those 75 or 100,000s down at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
So, because the three other dams are tough to go, and the farther the better for him, I think. Eventually, we may try him a mile and a half. But anything from, you know, a mile and eighth to a mile and a quarter, I think, is right up his alley. And he's another one that's just starting to come around and mature and develop into himself a little bit. And, you know, part of the problem with the Run Happies was when McInville offered that bonus as a two-year-old, everyone's trying to start him at two-year-olds, including me. Yeah. I ran this one at Kentucky Downs because of it. And, you know, Run Happy himself wasn't a two-year-old. He was a great three- and four-year-old, or three-year-old.
Yep.
So I think all his horses are kind of going along that same lines right now. They develop after their two-year-old year. And this horse could end up being a nice horse. I think he's a stakes caliber. Whether he's a grade one or not, I don't know. But I definitely think he's stakes caliber, and I think he's just going to keep getting better and better.
Well, you know, when this win the other day came at, this may have gone under the radar because it was on Saturday of Breeders' Cup weekend. And so people may have missed it, but wins by, you know, widening lengths, going the mile and a quarter, was actually almost 8-1. James Graham aboard, and 98 buyer. You really feel like this is... you know, this is a horse with upside. I'd expect, you know, Mineshaft, New Orleans handicap kind of a path.
Well,
why
he's
not?
Free now, so the Derby's kind of out of the question now.
But the Mineshaft, the Mineshaft, and the New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans will look at, you know, like the Tenacious and races like that down there.
To get him, to get him going.
If he's good enough to compete at that level by then.
I think he's knocking on the door.
Yes, he is. And if he improves, he'll be able to run in that race. And I think he's going to keep improving as he gets older.
We'll watch.
I say, he's just mentally just now starting to get there.
Give us an update on Minnesota Ready, because there's some expectations for this colt, and so far proven a little frustrating.
Well, the first race, the Kingdom on the Turf, he wasn't 100% ready. He was ready, but and also that the turf course at Kingland just wasn't that good this year. It was a bog most of the meet, and I hope they can do something about that. And then we came here and ran a one-turn mile, and he just didn't. The dirt started hitting him in the face, and he didn't like it very much. But Eden Prairie was her best surface was the turf, and his next race will be down in New Orleans, made the special weight on the turf. And if he's not 1-2 in that race, then he'll run his next race as a gelding. I forewarned him about that. So.
Well,
he's
you,
aware of the circumstances.
Exactly. You trained Eden Prairie.
Yes, I did. She was probably next to Belle, the best horse, the best mare I've ever had. I got to put Belle above her now, but Eden and Belle both are two of my favorite horses of all time.
And, you know, she's really struggled. This is the first of her three babies that make the racetrack, Minnesota Ready, More Than Ready. And she's actually had bad luck the two subsequent years, too, Neil. She's slipped her covers. That's too bad.
Yeah, she's been a very unlucky mare. The first two were Candy Rides and just didn't pan out, had different things happen. And this one acts like he's got a little talent. He's another one kind of like... Happy American. He's just going to need a few races to put it all together. He's still kind of a mental midget. But if he does get it together, he'd be one that I'd be looking at the turf stakes, the three-year-old turf stakes next year at Kingland and at Churchill.
Nice. You also had an allowance placement. We'll slip this in, too, going back to last week. Schmoozin, third with Brian Hernandez.
Schmoozin's getting to be a head-scratcher because the last two times he's hopped at the start. No reason, standing perfect, and he was probably five or six lengths behind the next to last horse the other night going five and a half and made a big run. Got beat a length for second, and if he breaks it all, he's definitely second. And whether we'd have beat the winner or not, I don't know that. The winner won pretty handily, so but at least we'd have made it more interesting. But well, he's just a horse. He is what he is. He's not going to be anything outstanding, but he'll win that condition.
Well, it took him a long time to break his maiden. This may be just one of those horses that, you know, that has to be sort of spoon-fed when it comes to that.
Yeah, he tries his butt off. He'll give you everything he's got, but he gives you all he's got. You know, there's not anything to really to develop there or bring along. He just is what he is, and he tries hard, and you got to love horses like that that give you everything they got.
You know, Neil, I should mention, because I just looked at the numbers, this has been by far your best year in the business. 17 wins with another 6 weeks of racing and $1.4 million in earnings. So congratulations on a just a banner year.
Thank you. Yeah, it has been a great year. And, you know, a lot of that goes to Bell and also to Mr. Losenbach for supplying me with better horses. Because the trainer doesn't make the horse makes the trainer.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, last question. Give us a take on Grove Daddy on Friday.
Grove Daddy, he is what he is also. He has to run in a one-eyed blinker because he tries to get out. And I think he'll come make a big run and hopefully be able to get there on Friday. And he's Bell's workmate. And after this race, he's going to get some time off also because he's more than earned it. Whether he finishes first or last, he's getting 4 to 6 weeks at the farm.
Well, he's a five-year-old candy ride gelding, and but this feels like, you know, this feels like one of those horses that around the barn, you know, kind of a just a veteran. I like that he's the workmate of Bell. That's a nice. That's a nice role to have in that barn.
Yeah, no, he's a neat horse to be around. He only tries to bite you, kick you, and strike you, but other than that, he's pretty nice. But I just like him because he goes out and he's Bell's workmate 90% of the time and gets his butt kicked every time. She blows by him like he's tied, and he'll still show up and try in his races.
Neil Pessin, in the wake of Bell's the One's latest success, coming in the Dream Supreme. A very important question coming in from a listener. Jay in Carlsbad asking, where you ate dinner to celebrate Saturday night?
Tell him he really doesn't want to know the answer to that question because it was late night and it's called drive-thru.
Oh, no.
But I will celebrate at Brightson's in New Orleans when I get down there.
There you go. I love it. And when do you, how quickly do you set up camp, Neil? How quickly do you pull out? Do you wait till the end of Churchill, or do you start to head down?
Well, it's going to depend on, we're running Grove Daddy Friday, and then Chris Block is sending me She Can't Sing to run on Saturday in the Chalukie. And if I don't decide to stay with Audrey's time for the Fall City, she won here pretty impressively the other day, but it'd be back awful quick. If I don't stay for that, then we're leaving on Monday to go to New Orleans.
Nice.
If we stay for the Fall City, then I'll leave the day after the Fall City runs.
Well, I've been looking at the calendar and trying to figure out a swing through for Risen Star Week or Derby Week, and looking forward to it. We missed last year, of course, and... Neil, delighted for you and the Lothenbachs and Corey and everybody. Bell's the One. Easy to lead over there, isn't she?
Yeah, all you got to do is lead her over there, and she shows up. It's nothing I do. It's all her.
I love it. Neil Pessin.
Like I say, a good trainer was never made from bad horses,
No.
Good horses make a trainer look good.
Always. And she keeps doing it. And it's important because everybody, you know, everybody loves hearing from you. It is so easy to root for and delighted to be able to connect. So we'll see you. We'll look to see you. If we don't talk about a win here at the end of the meet, we'll see you in New Orleans.
Okay. Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Neil Pessin, everybody. And Belle's the One, back as a six-year-old, and pretty much can see the way she, you know, is going to line up her dates for next year. You can circle the Madison, the spring, and go from there. And Greg Foley will have Sconson ready, too, and the two of them will cross paths again next year. Pretty good. We got to count on these fillies and mares to come back and have the have some continuity for the fans. It's great to talk to Neil. We're going to talk to Tyler Service, and as hinted, Lindsay Schultz is going to join us as well. And so two young trainers that Tyler's got his beachhead established, but Lindsay just getting started. So we'll get both of them in today. And Tyler Service joins us now. Tyler, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Steve? Thanks for having me.
Not at all. And I had mentioned coming out of the Pennsylvania Derby that, you know, spent part of the day, and of course Will Schwartz and your dad, and they had the try in the Cotillion, and you mentioned to me that, you know, you were going to establish a beachhead in New York, and sure enough, I go to start looking at Thursday and Friday's cards, and there you are. Talk a little bit about sending horses to New York.
Yeah, so I've been on my own now for about 2 years, and I established a decent amount of business with PA Breds and a couple of cheaper horses here at Parks, and started a couple of owners that gave me an opportunity with a couple better horses, and we thought it might be a good chance to take them up to New York and see where we fit.
How are you going to talk about the mechanics of doing something like this?
Well, something like this, especially for us young people, it's really not easy. Really trying to get over the stage of doing everything yourself and putting a little more relying on an assistant and things like that, just being split up. That could be difficult logistically-wise, but I got a great team. I got a great group of guys that are going to help me out up in New York, so we're excited. We're excited to see if we can get things rolling.
You know, it's interesting because we've had a couple of trips with one of ours with a New York bred Kid Chocolate. We've come down and run in a couple of starter allowances, and he's picked up checks. He's been third and fourth in a couple of tries this fall. Now we turn to the dirt. How do you look at the condition book and separate what stock is appropriate to bring to Aqueduct versus what you'll run at Parks?
Most of the horses here at Parks are mostly PA breds, which that 40% bonus that they give away to owners here at Parks, and then 20% up at Penn National, that's pretty huge for them. So that's more of our focus here for our horses at Parks. So up with New York will be horses that won a bunch of races, high-level claiming horses, low-level war claiming horses, like you see a lot running up there in New York, and those $10,000, $16,000 open claimers. And then, obviously, a couple horses we have some high hopes for, like Sugar Ray, who wins PA Derby Day. He's the one that's in Friday MCO up there. We like this horse a lot. Unfortunately, he bled that day in Pennsylvania Derby, which was a non-Lasix race, so we adjusted a couple things with him feed-wise and dietary-wise, and hopefully he can recover from that.
Interesting. And that's always, it's become increasingly an issue to deal with when you're under the way certain conditions are running. And I appreciate you you know, explaining or, you know, being open about it. Explain to people, you know, and of course, you know, your dad, you know, coming up under him, you certainly have got as good a teacher as anybody. Talk about the kinds of things that you have to do, and that, you know, you experiment, and how you evaluate, you know, whether they've recovered adequately, and bringing them back from an incident.
A lot of moving pieces with horses, as you know, and things pop up just out of the blue, and you need to adjust and try to figure out how to overcome the obstacles that are thrown in front of you. Mainly so, it's just paying attention, knowing your horse, knowing the way they eat, knowing the way they train, the way their coat looks on a normal basis, and just paying attention and keeping your eye on those things to make sure that he carries that throughout the year.
Well, the chance to come to New York, it should note that there's plenty of outfits that ship horses in, and don't necessarily, you know, succeed and find it difficult. So far this year, you've sent, you've had six starters, four horses, Winning Drive, Bank on Shea, Sugar Ray 2, and three horses, I should say. And you've got three wins. Winning Drive and Bank on Shea have come up to New York and all at Aqueduct and run well. That's a good sign, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it was just a product of bringing the right horses for the right races. Bank on Shea, just if you look at his back class, he was just an ultra-consistent, talented horse. Unfortunately, got injured, had 11 months off, and we brought him back, and he just continued to prove himself that he's a top-quality horse. And unfortunately, after his last race, he got injured again, and we had to stop on him again. But hopefully we can get him back up there probably beginning of next year if all goes well.
Well, and we should note, too, that you've come to New York, both Belmont and Saratoga, and you've got stake placements, right? You had Sugar Ray, too, Birdstone?
Yeah. I took Sugar Ray up to run the Birdstone. He was a very good second to Lone Rock, which, as you saw last week or two weekends ago, that he's proven just to be the best marathon maybe in the last 10 years. And we're really happy with the way things are clicking right now, and being able to bring horses up onto the big stage and perform. Owners look for that stuff, so that's what we try to do. We try to bring our horse on the best day, and hopefully the results are there.
Well, excited for you, and when you look at what you've done in the first two plus years, you can sense the steady, the small increase each year in number of starters. You got a few more wins between now and the end of the year to establish a new high in wins for the year. Are you looking for clients, or are you going to be interested in the claim box coming to New York? Talk a little bit about what the business plan is like.
Definitely both, and I think they kind of go hand in hand there. There's a really strong claiming game up in New York. You can go up there, and if you pay the right money, not necessarily all the time you have to, but if you pay the right money, you can get yourself a decent horse up there that could do very well. And I think if you do well in those spots, I think that'll also generate some business your way as well. So I think they kind of go hand in hand, and I think we'll attack both of the stages pretty good. We'll attack the claiming game, and we'll see if we can generate some new faces.
What has been, and again, you've got the family tie that, you know, it's got you, you know, from birth essentially to be involved in the game, but
right.
What has been the biggest challenge as you try to establish yourself? We're going to talk to Lindsay Schultz, who's going out on her own as well after you, and I wanted people to hear what it's like for somebody young and trying to do this on their own.
Well, it's actually funny you asked that. I was talking to a friend of mine, Jamie Begg, who used to be Cash's assistant, who's now now on his own up in New York. He shipped the horse down there to Parks, and we were chit-chatting. And I guess one of the most difficult things is coming away from my dad and all the talented horses he has, and Jamie with Mark Cassie. It's just kind of finding your niche with the talent that you have. You're so used to being around really good horses, and they kind of make your job a little bit easier when they're pretty talented. So just dealing with the horses you have and knowing to pay attention and try to get them to run their best race every time.
Talk about the personnel side of this. You know, you talked about your team, and it, you know, one of the things that is a unique challenge, it would seem to me, to anybody, you know, trying to do this, you know, as a career choice, is that you've got to have literally at least three different or four different aptitudes. I mean, you've got to have the horsemanship first and foremost. Then you've got to have the interpersonal skills and the training skills and the communication skills to deal with staff. You've got to have the confidence and you know the outgoing personality to attract owners and to you know to interface with you know with you know typically you know successful accomplished you know people of you know, their own walk of life, business-wise. And then you have to run the nuts and bolts of payroll and workman's comp and everything that goes with it. I mean, so there's a four-pronged, you know, personality challenge that comes with this job.
Yes, definitely. And I think... you have to have confidence in yourself of what you're doing on an everyday basis based on with your help and your interaction with your help, because it's all everybody follows by example. So I mean that's the biggest thing is work ethic and trying to prove by example and just have the team having. I mean it's like a football team, like watching the Eagles. You have to have everybody trust the process. I mean, that's the biggest thing is everybody's got to buy in and think what you're doing is the right thing and take care of the horses and dedication to work ethic.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I share Eagle fandom, you know, not just with you and Will and your dad and everybody, but also with the Clancy brothers. And when they were bemoaning... some of Howie's draft picks. It was either last year or the year before, and I responded to them, trust the process. And they were like, stop with that. Stop with trust the process.
Yeah, I think that saying goes to a lot of different business platforms. You can use that a lot. But that's a big thing in horse racing. Everybody's got to buy in, and every yes. day things get frustrating. Things don't go as planned, and you just need to pick the team up, and you got to move on to the next day and know that, listen, we still got to do it. We still got to come here every day, and the results will turn around. It's an up-and-down game, and we're just trying to ride the ups as long as we can.
Well, looking for some ups potentially even as early as this afternoon. Let's get a couple of opinions about what's coming up at Parks today in the 9th and the 10th. A nice allowance group, the Semper Fidelis in the 9th today.
Yeah, I got that horse from Staffy. He ran also a PA Derby day, and he was victorious that day. He ran a real nice maiden race going 7 furlongs. And ever since I had him, I mean, Staffy did a great job with him. He came to me in great form. He looked great, and he's been training pretty forwardly since. We are shorting him up a little bit, which might be a question, but I think with the amount of pace that's in this race today, it should set up pretty decent for him.
Well, and just you know, just looking at this group, the ninth going three quarters. Yeah, I hadn't looked at this race, but now that we dig in, I like it. Tell me about Adorno too, because you obviously ride him and he's won some races for you.
He's a real talented young kid. Might have the best work ethic of any jockey here at Parks. He's here every single day, even on dark days. Galloping horses, jogging horses, breezing horses. He's just the work ethic is there, and he's got some talent. And I think as long as he keeps up with what he's doing, he's going to be pretty big in the game for a long time.
Nice. How old?
I believe he's 23, but don't hold me to it.
I'll tell you what, he's got a very nice percentage, and next time we come to town, there's a chance for a Tyler Service double on the card. In fact, today, tell us about the pair in the 10th going 1.70 miles.
Yeah, actually, the horse I got in the one-hole Rittenhouse, I was pretty disappointed with his race last time. I thought shorting him back up was going to be the key. And watching the replay, he rolled up there at the top of the lane like he was going to put himself right in contention and then just kind of fizzled out and flattened out. So we're going to stretch him back out today, and hopefully he can get a nice, comfortable lead and just keep plugging away at that. The other horse, Dr. Grunswich, he's coming off of a gelding. And I hope that puts his mind into the business, because physique and talent that I see in the morning is not there, is there, and he just seemed to be a morning glory so far. So hopefully the gelding for him is the difference maker.
Well, and then tomorrow you got another pair, 50 Shades of Grey in the 7th and Sunday Inn in the 10th.
Yeah, it's a busy week for us. 50 Shades, he's the first time also for us. He's coming from Carlos David. From the same owner group that owned Bank on Shea, great people. This is our first try with him. He's been training pretty forwardly as well. He kind of backed off a pretty slow pace last time, and we changed some equipment on him. So hopefully that'll be a difference maker. And Sunday Inn, we had a really good race last time with the same conditions. The Never Win 4 7500. Got nailed the last couple jumps, and I think she's in for a big performance tomorrow as well.
Well, and then that gets us to Aqueduct on Friday, and the card on Friday is unbelievable, and I'm going to end up having to absolutely handicap this group and Sugar Ray too. I haven't seen figures or anything yet, and won't get at it until, you know, tomorrow or Thursday. But this at a glance looks like a terrific group.
Definitely. It's a salty bunch. I put them in there MTO for that reason. I was really more targeting the distance of this race, the mile and 3/16, just for him. He's more of a marathon plotting type. So I was really interested in that distance. We were thinking about maybe giving him a shot on the turf, because he did run one time, first time of his life on the grass. He didn't run much, but you can get those options for longer distances in the turf races. But with the horses that drew in there, we end up electing to just stay MTO, because they picked a big, salty field and a lot of talented horses.
Well, and what would you do instead? Although there is a little bit of rain in the forecast, actually, as it happens.
Yeah, there's a little bit of rain. We've been doing our rain dances over here at Parks for a couple of days now, hoping we can get the precipitation to take that off. And if it does, it looks like that might be a 3-4 horse field if it comes off the grass. So I think it's a good start back for him, especially considering his last race. And we want to try to get his confidence going in the right direction again.
Nice. He has a horse that, he's won 3, hit the board another 6 times. He's made $113,000. So he's got the stake placement. And just a 4-year-old. He's a wicked strong out of an awesome again mare.
Yeah, definitely. He's very consistent. He tries every time. Obviously, we had the mishap in his last race, which might be one of his worst race dates. So hopefully we can recover with that. He was a really good $25,000 private purchase.
Who else is lurking in the barn that didn't come up here today?
I have a two-year-old by Competitive Edge that's unstarted. He's been doing some pretty nice things in the morning. There's a race entering Thursday here at Parks for him, maiden special weight. You might see him in there, depending on how he comes out of a little blowout tomorrow. But he shows to have some talent. And another horse I have, her name is My First Love. She ran up there in maiden 50 New York Reds and got a little tired and probably didn't bring her up there fit enough. So we'll reround with her, but I think she has a little bit of talent as well.
What's the filly's name?
My First Love.
No, the first one you mentioned.
The colt Perfect Day.
Perfect Day. Nice. All right. We'll jot it down, and we'll keep tabs. Tyler, delighted to catch up, and wanted to absolutely give you a spotlight moving in to New York and trying to get established. You've certainly shipped up live horses, and now look to see you regularly in the PPs at the Big A this winter.
Hey, thanks, Steve. You guys got a great show, and I'm happy to be on it.
Tyler Service, and good to get back. We talked to him probably, you know, a year and a half ago on air when he was getting going 2 years ago, and when he told me he was coming to New York, I said, "All right, we gotta talk to you." And here's the first starter of the winter MTO, but watch for Tyler. In the PPs, and there's a firster to keep tabs on. Perfect Day.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a good race. This will be good today too at Parks. We'll tune that in. We're going to stay here and be joined by Lindsay Schultz. Lindsay getting out on her own, and this is a nice story. I always love giving new horsemen a chance to talk about themselves and advertise their services. Lindsay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
It's great to connect. I saw the note from Marty McGee that you're getting ready to, you know, get out there and you go to Oaklawn this winter. You know, talk about establishing yourself and starting out on your own.
It's something I've wanted to do for a long time. I've worked for some great people, and the opportunity came up this summer. I spoke to Marshall Graham of Ten Strike Racing, and he was happy to help me get going and get some horses together. So that was how we kind of set up and got going.
That's tremendous, and your background is really, you mentioned, you know, who you've worked for top people, but you've also got the Darley Flying Start program under your belt as well, and I'd love for you to talk about how you got interested in equine sport to begin with, and the way in which the journey kind of unfolded for you.
Sure, Steve. I grew up riding horses when I was younger, just hunter jumpers and eventers, and just loved being around them. And when it came time to go to college, my dad said, "Well, you can't really major in horses because, you know, if you decide you don't like them anymore, then you're not going to have a job." So I found the equine business program at the University of Louisville. And we thought that was a good compromise. So when I was in Louisville, I went to Breeders' Cup the first year, and I just really got into racing. A good friend of mine kind of showed me around and taught me about thoroughbreds. And then I worked at Lane's End Farm during college, and I worked for Nick Vito during college. And then I heard of the Darley Flying Start program and was lucky enough to be accepted on that following school.
A few things. You grew up in Connecticut. Where in Connecticut?
It's called Simsbury, Connecticut. It's north of Hartford.
Well, I'm from Manchester, so you don't have to explain where Simsbury is. Where'd you go to high school?
I actually went to Suffield High.
You went to Suffield. Very cool. Very cool. I love it. Certainly a strong, equine area. People wouldn't realize how I don't think anybody would understand how rural Connecticut is, especially east of the river. But that's a good spot. I had so many friends growing up. At the time, it didn't really mean anything to me, but friends that had hunter jumper experience, or had trail horses, and they'd go. I remember going to different academies or riding stables that it very much a part of the scene. Explain to everybody how comprehensive Flying Start is, and what they do with you, and what the experience entails in Flying Start.
So on the Godolphin Flying Start program, it lasts for 2 years, and you go to anywhere from 4 to 6 to 8 to more countries, and you spend time with trainers, you spend time with syndicate owners, you spend time on farms. We did everything from bull watch to putting up fence to, being in the stables with Gay Waterhouse in Australia. We even got to go to the international races in Hong Kong. We inspected yearlings, in multiple different countries. So the practical hands-on experience is huge, and you see all facets of the industry. But then in addition to that, it's almost like you're getting your MBA in equine business, because you take marketing classes, you do a business module at University College Dublin. So the whole course culminates with us writing a business plan on something we could potentially pursue after graduation. You do finance modules, and you talk to the top people all over the world.
Did that experience, did it change any aspect of the direction that you decided upon? Because a lot of times we talk, in fact, heading to University of Arizona for symposium at the beginning of December, and very often the students there will think that they want to go in one direction, and then they end up maybe over on the horse side, or they start on the horse side and end up on the business side. Did the Flying Start, what kind of influence did it have on your decision once you came back and had to go out and work?
Well, to be honest, it might have confused me a little bit at times, because I loved so many aspects of the industry. But I always went back to training and the hands-on part of taking care of horses. Before lectures in the morning, I used to ride my bike at called Kildangan Stud in Ireland, which is where we were staying. So I'd ride my bike a few miles down the road to McCulford's yard, and I'd ride out before we had lectures on the Flying Start. So I always took every opportunity to be around racehorses and the training part of it. But honestly, when I got out, I thought there was a million parts of the industry that appealed to me. I think I just kind of naturally kept coming back to the training.
Well, you come back and you work for the great one, Tommy Proctor, and then for as great a horseman as the generation has known in Claude Ray, with Shug McGahee. Talk about learning under Proctor and Shug.
Well, Tom was so great, because he doesn't he doesn't ever let you get away with anything. I mean, I started with Tom when I knew a little bit about horses, but you know, I really didn't know a whole lot. So Tom had to kind of teach me most of what I know. And I think the fact that I would get there early and I wanted to stay all day and I wanted to work hard, you know, he didn't mind so much to have to tell me how to do things and teach me. But it was just a huge experience. And for someone to kind of, you know, take the chance on someone young, that needs to learn and build up in the industry, it was great. And then the longer I was with him, the more responsibility I had. And he's never shy to give you more responsibility once you show you can handle that.
Well, and the one thing that, you know, well, you mentioned Zito and Proctor and McGahey, you're getting exposure to a level of horsemanship and understanding that is just difficult to, you know, to even, you know, put a value on, given who they came up under, respectively, and what they know. You've got about as nice a resume. You're early mid 30s.
Yeah, 33.
Nice. Age de Christ, as they say in Quebec. The chance to do this, to establish, and we mentioned 10 Strike and Clay and Marshall, and they've been so helpful to any number of particularly young horsemen that are going out on their own. And of course, this summer, Michelle Giangiulio her magical first win came in a stake. That's about as heavy a way,
yeah,
to start a career as anybody could have. Talk about putting a team together and how many horses and how you've had three starters so far. Talk about the mechanics of doing it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's definitely something you can only prepare so much for, right? You have to actually get the horses in before you can get stalls, and you have to get the horses in before you can hire employees. And so it's, you know, the chicken before the egg, I guess. But it's, you know, it's something that I've kind of always thought about how, you know, I wanted my program to work. And obviously, you know, I've taken a lot from Shug and from Tom and the people that I've worked for and how they run their organizations. It's just slowly growing right now, and I hope it will grow even more. We just, you know, it's just two of us here right now with five horses, but I have a couple more to come in for Oaklawn, and I've started, you know, we've been claiming, and one of Tom's owners, actually Alan Schubert, he's been another one to support me. So we've gotten a horse for him, and we're looking to get another one. It's just growing bit by bit, and I hope I can keep doing that and keep building on it and hiring more good people to help. It's exciting.
Well, and so far, I'm just looking at the two runners. You had Capture the Glory that you ran at Churchill on Friday, and before that, Dot Notation. Is that that's the other one, right?
Yeah. Dot Notation was actually, while I was working for Tom, he had suggested, you know, why don't you try to get a horse or two yourself? You know, and get your legs underneath you. So that, she was quite a few years ago, but she was a quirky little filly. And actually I had the opportunity to train her for a bit before I went and I went and ran Glen Hill Farm for Craig Burnick, kind of sure. in between working for Tom and for Shug.
Nice. So, well, you know, what's interesting about her is seeing, you know, seeing her name, because that her dam, that Aunt Dot Dot, that's Dot Matrix's dam, and you know, which is Marshall and Ten Strike, and that's why the name kind of caught my eye.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Marshall had that homebred, and then we had an Artie Schiller 2-year-old that he didn't quite make it to the races that year. But yeah, it was so neat to have that filly. And I think that Matrix, I think he's actually just kind of, they started making him a riding horse now. So it's a nice family to be around.
That's very cool. In fact, I'm just, she was one for 29. So not, but she,
yeah,
tell you what, she had,
not a fast one.
No, but she had quite a few placements. She was by Bullet Train, and Marshall's tried, he's tried all kinds of interesting pairings with Aunt Dot Dot. And she's produced two. In addition to Dot Matrix, she also got Aunt Ellipsis, that was a stake horse as well.
I think when Marshall sent her, that was the deal. He said, "Look, Lindsay, every foal she's had is one. So at least you can do that with her."
Nice. There you go. I'm so excited for you, Lindsay, and you know, the background. When I saw what Marty had noted, it seems like you pretty much had done all you needed to do, and it looks like you have made all kinds of terrific decisions. So this feels like the logical next step, and it feels like you're poised for success.
Well, thank you very much for saying that, and I hope I don't disappoint.
You can't, not going to disappoint. Not based on what you got going on, and people will see you at Oaklawn, and just a couple of weeks away at this point.
Yep, definitely. I think we're planning to ship probably in the next week to 10 days.
Nice. Well, for those that want to follow Lindsay, you can follow her at LSchultz626. LSchultz626. I'll put the link up and today and follow. She'll be working the Churchill and Oaklawn circuit back and forth, and I'm going to hopefully get off to a flying start, literally, in this case, Lindsay. Well done.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, and we'll look forward to cheering on that first winner. And actually, I'll see you. We'll be at Oaklawn for a couple of days leading up to opening day, so get a chance to say hello. And
okay.
All right. Lindsay Schultz, everybody.
Great.
You got it. Lindsay Schultz Racing Stable. And between her and Tyler Service, it's inspiring, because it's showing that young people that are willing to commit to the industry and have a passion. I mean, that's one of the commonalities in so many, just so many people in every area of interest in the game. It just inspires commitment and passion, and once you're bitten by this bug, it's tough to, right? It's tough to turn back.
Absolutely.
Well, you're making it happen, and that should be inspiring, That was one of the motivations today to have you and Tyler on, and it was kind of perfect back to back. So, Lindsay, I appreciate it. Talk soon.
All right, bye.
Lindsay Schultz, there you go. So, two people that in their 30s that are making making their way in the industry. Let's make our way to the bottom of the hour, 90 minutes in, 90 to come, and that'll include Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. We'll let Steve talk about the kinds of things that, you know, can take a horse like English Channel just in seemingly in a matter of days. I mean, we don't know all the details of of whatever ailment, but there's plenty of candidates, and I want Steve to kind of riff on that. I mean, we have talked historically about some of the challenges of older horses. Of course, you know, Steve is the more or less the attending veterinarian at Old Friends, and he volunteers his service to Michael and, you know, looking after the horses there. And, you know, we've most notably, I think, talked about colic as the biggest challenge to an older horse, because their system gets rigid, and the potential for blockages and for colic increase, you know, exponentially. But something like this, whether it's neurologic or viral, it seems, you know, that, you know, we heard literally on a Wednesday that he wasn't going to be available for stallion duty, and then 24 hours later he's gone. So I want Steve to talk about it. And Steve, of course, you know, put his hands on English Channel as a racehorse, so it's particularly, I imagine, personal to him, and Todd Pletcher, who's going to join us later in the show. Andy Serling as well, in between Dr. A and Todd. All right, second half at the races, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over